Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, January 17th, 2012, and I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-hosts, Lavendar and Sierra. Once again this evening, we have the honor of presenting Kathleen McGowan, International and New York Times best-selling author of The Expected One, The Book of Love, and The Poet Prince. Kathleen was with us 2 weeks ago, and people are still talking about her powerful effect on them, myself included. And a double treat tonight, also, our dear sister Catherine Brinkley, author of Jewels for the Soul, publisher of Kinetics Magazine, and well-known radio host, will join us to talk about her recent trip to southern France with Kathleen and Philip. We're so excited to be talking about the Sacred France Starseed Quest and Kathleen's connection to Mary Magdalene and hearing a firsthand account of Catherine's experience with Kathleen. The website for Kathleen is KathleenMcGowan.com, and Catherine's site is KineticsMag.com. We want to thank Sahar for hosting the switchboard this evening, and if you have questions for either of our guests or Lavendar, please call in on 917-889-8292 and then press 1 so we know you have a question. And don't forget to click follow on our show page and tell a friend about us. You may have missed this, but Starseed Radio Academy was a featured show for the first time here on Blog Talk Radio, so go team! For our new listeners, our main site is starseedhotline.com, where we have a lot of vital information for Starseed in our vault of knowledge. The entire site is coded for Starseed activation, and we also have a support forum for Starseed at starseedhotline.ning.com. Plus, we're on iTunes if you'd like to download our shows to go. We'll get started with Lavendar, Kathleen, and Catherine in just a minute, but first I'd like to let you know that if you want to contact us privately, the toll-free number for our website is 888-881-0881. Our Stage 1 Starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings and your natal astrological chart. And the Stage 2 session is a one-on-one phone consultation. You can find out if you have star markings and how they determine your natural state and rites of passage. We now offer a Stage 4 support service with Sierra for contactees and abductees, so check out Sierra's World on our main site. And don't forget, if you have a birthday coming up, you should know when your 10 hours of power will occur by requesting your solar return timing. Your manifestational ability is amplified 1,000-fold during those 10 hours, so make the most of it. And now I'd like to introduce my co-host, Lavendar.
Hello, everyone, and Arielle, I'm so excited about this trip to France. We've just been jumping up and down with it ever since Kathleen was on a couple of weeks ago, and it looks like that we're going to have maybe a couple of more trips planned this year because we have that much interest. And I've been looking at charts until I'm almost cross-eyed, and I've only gone through the first 100, and I've got 300 more to go, so that means that the other groups haven't even looked at their charts yet. So it looks like that we've really started something with the Starseed Tours to France.
Well, let's hear more about that. We have Kathleen McGowan on the line.
Right, bring her on.
Good evening, Kathleen.
Hello, everybody.
Well, you've really started something, I'm here to tell you.
I didn't start it.
Yeah, you started it. It's all you right now, I'll tell you, because the focus and energy is beaming through your books and through the tours that you've already put together on your end. Now we've got tours on our end, so it's all dovetailing very beautifully.
Well, it's very, very exciting to see this coming together and how rapidly it's coming together. I mean, 2012 is really off to a running start, because there's just so much to get done, and you can feel the excitement and the energy and the quickening. I mean, everything is just happening so fast. You know, I'm an Aries, so that's good for me because I like to run. But it is exciting, and it's funny for me because I've been doing this since 1995, and I watched it, you know, originally, you know, happen slowly and evolve, and then it's been sort of gathering intensity until all of a sudden, bam! Now we're really off and running, and it's really an amazing thing. And one of the things I wanted to say is that when we scheduled me to come back, it was really just sort of a matter of making the schedule work. But today, in the world of sacred France, January 17th is considered one of the two holiest days of the year in the ancient traditions there. So it's very interesting that coincidentally, which of course we know there's no such thing as coincidence. I prefer to call them co-created incidents. That we would end up doing this second call today, the second show today, when it's such an important day. January 17th, you'll find it a lot when you start digging into some of the mysteries around the Languedoc area, the mysteries around Rennes-le-Château. They write about it in Holy Blood, Holy Grail, and a lot of the other books about the region, that this was a very special feast day. And I was talking to some friends in Rennes-le-Château in the south of France today, and they all gather there on the morning of January 17th, and they all spend a lot of time there. And what happens is there's a very ancient church in Rennes-le-Château that is dedicated to Mary Magdalene. There's been a church dedicated to her there for 1,000 years. And it has very special stained glass windows that were installed there in the 1800s. And on January 17th, at exactly midday, if the sun is out, the light shines through the windows and creates something called the Blue Apples Effect. And the Blue Apples Effect is this beautiful light effect that happens in the church, where little pieces of blue circular light sort of dance around around the church. And this has been, you know, one of the mysteries is we see blue apples, and in my books I talk about the Chateau of the Blue Apples, and I use the blue apple symbolism. And there's a lot of interest about what blue apples mean and what people have interpreted blue apples to mean. And one of the things that seems to be sort of the most, I think, the one that works for me and is the most popular is this idea that blue apples represented the bloodline. The blue apples were the bloodline of this sort of sacred lineage. Is it the lineage of Mary and Jesus? Yes. But is it something more than that? Does it even go back further than that? Yes. It's a more ancient bloodline that which Jesus and Mary Magdalene were certainly a part of, but even goes back much, much further than that to the original gods, to the original goddesses. So what you could really say is that blue apples are, in a sense, star seeds.
Wow.
Wow.
It's really, yeah, I didn't have that piece of information. But see, it's a star date also in our galactic astrology. The sun is at 26 degrees of Capricorn, and it'll go 27 in the ascension code. So that's just really amazing. Yeah, that matches. And that's the grid to Atlantis also. I'm tracking the crystal grid and the Atlantis material, and it would come through that frequency. So that makes a lot of sense.
Absolutely. Well, it's just amazing to me how these things are now just happening sort of constantly and effortlessly. It was an effortless synchronicity. We didn't plan it. We didn't sit down and say, let's make this happen on this day. It just did. And that is the thing that's happening now more and more frequently that I find incredibly exciting. And what I always say to when I talk about this with people is we have to acknowledge this as miraculous and beautiful, because the more we acknowledge these synchronicities, the faster they come and the more freely they come. And that's really what I'm finding.
Well, synchronization is confirmation, as far as I'm concerned. It just, you know, and twice is a pattern is another thing that I say. Has Catherine joined us yet, Ariel?
Yes, she's here. She's here.
All right, let's bring her on.
Okay. Catherine, sweetheart, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Hello, everyone, and happy 2012.
Yes.
I'm so happy to be back on this show. Hello, Kathleen.
Hello, my beautiful sister, Catherine.
How are you?
I am so happy to talk to you. So
wonderful. Oh, I am too.
Well,
I just wanted to make
Catherine, I'd like for you to just kind of bring us up to date about your trip to France and anything that you want to share with our audience tonight. So just take it away, Catherine.
Okay, the very first thing I want to say is because I got so into that story that Kathleen was just telling us about the significance of January 17th, and it just dawned on me because I spent a week with her in France, and not that I had forgotten how spellbinding she is, but as I listened to her relate that story, I was made aware once again that she speaks in the same enchanting and intriguing way that she writes. And this is a rare thing. Many people can write well, but they can't convey that same kind of spellbinding intrigue in the way they speak. And Kathleen, I have to give that to you. Thank you for that story. When I had the good fortune of going to France with Kathleen and Philip, I didn't realize how it was going to change my life. I took along with me my 18-year-old. It was her 18th birthday present to be able to go to the south of France for that week last October. And I will say that for anyone who has the opportunity to take this trip, trust me, you will never be the same. Your life will be altered forever. And when I told my daughter Adriana I was going to be on today, I said, just write me a paragraph that I can read to Kathleen and Lavendar and Ariel and everyone listening about how you felt about this trip through the eyes and the heart of an 18-year-old. Just write a few things. And so she gave this to me earlier today, and I want to share it with everyone. Kathleen, you'll probably want to post it on the site. From an 18-year-old, I think this is pretty miraculous. And Adriana said, the sacred France tour for me was an awakening. The untainted beauty of the landscape captures your heart and makes you feel like you are living in the most inspired dream ever. This is a place that transports you to where the ancient and mystical coexist within the modern world, where wisdom lies and where your personal power can be discovered. The south of France was for me a retreat for my body, mind, and soul.
That is magical. She is amazing.
Isn't that amazing? When she handed it to me, she said, you probably won't like it. And I'm like, oh, give that to me. Let me see what you wrote. And I'm like, this is unbelievable. And this is exactly, I think, what happened to us. Every day of the 7 days that we spent together was more magical than the day before. And Kathleen has had a thing on the trip where every day we got up and we said, best day ever. and it turned out to be the best day ever. Every day was filled with a new place to visit, new information to learn, new emotions to feel and to digest. And I remember one day, I don't remember which day it was. Was it the last day that we climbed up Mount Segur?
Yeah, that's the last day, always.
Oh, that's always the last day. Now, that's magical in and of itself that I could climb up, 3,000 feet to get to this castle on the top of this hill. It's not my thing to do that kind of hiking, but we all made it up there, and I was inside this castle with, there's no cover on it anymore, and it's probably as big as a football field, right? Easily.
Oh, yeah, very big.
Yeah, it's huge inside. And I was talking to my daughter, Adriana, and I said, I wonder what this place looked like, you know, when people were living here and there was a top on it. And out of nowhere, this Frenchman comes up behind me and says in this lovely accent, I can show you what it looked like. I'm like, what? And he pulls out this iPad and he starts showing me pictures that he's drawn. He's an architect, and he has drawn pictures of how they know it looked when people were living there. And I don't even know, you'd have to tell me what year, Kathleen, that was.
It was in the beginning, it was for the most part from 1203 to 1244 when the castle fell.
Okay, well, there you go. I mean, you know, that was a few years ago. And here he had reproduced it on his iPad. And, I mean, just
him. It was instant manifestation. You said, I wonder what it looks like.
That's
and he manifested to show you.
That's it. He manifested to show me. I had not seen him earlier. Poof, he was there. But this is what I'm trying to convey. These things happen in sacred France. You wish it,
over and over
and
again.
It's there. Yeah, over and over again. There's just no doubt about it. And I think the most magical part of the trip, besides visiting all of these beautiful castles and chateaus and just being in that warm and endearing and embracing energy of the south of France, it really was Kathleen and Philip. And not only the information, because they're just both so friggin' brilliant, and together their energy is so marvelous. They work together as one. That's the only way I know how to say it. There's no, you know, there's no competition. There's no one knows more than the other. They work and live and breathe and love as one being, and to be in that, in the presence of that, and to be in the south of France in the presence of that. It was a dream come true, I know, for everyone that was on the trip.
And it was a dream group. And this is the thing that, you know, for us it's so beautiful, is that when we bring people together here who are coming with the same kind of intention that Catherine and Adriana had when they arrived, you know, you can't help but have the best day ever. And that becomes our catchphrase. We start every day saying it's going to be the best day ever, because it is. Because every single day that we're there is going to change your life. It's going to be the best day ever.
Absolutely. And this year, this trip, or the trips that you're going to do this year, because I know from talking to Lavendar, there has to be more than one, because so many of the starseeds need to make this trip. But when you put together the elements of Kathleen and Philip, you put together, you add that to the year 2012 and the energy that is, you know, being bathed upon the planet right now, and then the information that Lavendar has as to the reason and the ability she has to, excuse me, to activate the star codes while there, I can't imagine anything better than this, anything more powerful than this.
Yeah, I think, I'm so excited about it, but I can't even begin to think of how it's going to look and what it's going to feel like when we're all there together, other than it's going to be, a beautiful and blessed thing. And I hope the people of France are ready for it.
I don't think they could be ready for it, because like you say, we have no idea the way it's actually going to manifest, but it's going to be rocking and rolling, that's for sure. And I had asked... Go ahead.
Sorry. But the other thing I was going to say is, and you can attest to this, Catherine, is that one of the things that we are very careful to do when we go there is to really integrate with the people who are native to the land.
Mm-hmm.
We have, our mission is to not be tourists. Our mission is to be community and to integrate into the community and support the local communities as their friends, as travelers and friends from another place who are coming to be with them and to participate with them rather than be tourists in their place. And so this is something that we're very careful. And I think, Catherine, you would probably agree, you never felt like a tourist, did you?
Never once. I mean, we went into people's homes. I forget the name of the beautiful pianist that we listened to her play, her songs that night. We went into restaurants where the owners were friends of yours, and places where they weren't friends of yours. But never did we feel like tourists. Never did I have that sensation of being an ugly American or not being welcomed in France, which I know is pervasive. And a lot of people's thinking, never was that the case. The French people were absolutely open and welcoming and loving and generous to us every step of the way. And it was like coming home. That's the way you designed the trip, Kathleen, and that's the feeling that everyone had on the trip. You know, everyone that I talked to, it's like I'm coming home. I've never been here before, but I'm coming home.
You know, and what I always say is that there's something about this land that supports your authenticity, and that's where the homecoming, I think, feels so powerful. When you are there, you're fully yourself. You're not distracted by all the things in our sort of modern world that can sometimes throw us off track. When you're there, you're really focused and really centered and really awake to what you are truly here to do. I think that when you're in that place, the land itself so supports you being your highest self, your best self, your most awakened self. And that is, you know, when I talk to people who come home and you know, people who are on our trip in October are still saying, gosh, you know, half of me's still in France. And that's because that awakening of who you are is something that becomes so powerful that, you know, you really can't ever go home again. It's kind of like Dorothy. You know, once you witness this sort of technicolor Oz that exists, once you're fully awake in this place that supports you being that, it can be a little bit of a shock to go back to black and white. And that's why so many people, when they do come back, take very large steps to change their lives in a very positive way. But I always feel like I almost need to put that on as a disclaimer before people come. You know, warning, this will change your life. It will shake you up. Don't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I have to agree. And I think a lot of it is the places that we went, they still hold that sacred energy. They still hold that holiness, like the one rock cathedral that we went to where the Magdalene was supposedly taught herself. Is that not true?
Yes, absolutely.
And to walk in there, the energy was the highest I think I have ever felt anywhere. And you just feel overcome with this reverence and awe, and it heightens your vibration, your frequency. It heightens your ability to pay attention to what's going on around you. And like you say, once you've experienced that, you never come back down. You stay at that level, at that frequency, at that heightened state, and everything from that point on is seen through different eyes. And I can imagine, I didn't get to go to the reunion last weekend. How was it?
Oh, we missed you.
Thank you.
We missed you very much, and we all thought of you and Adriana. But, you know, I'm glad you asked the question because the other thing that happens that you can attest to is when you are together in such concentrated space for 7 days, the people in that space become very close. And I think it's twofold. I think first of all, it's not an accident. And certainly in this case with Lavendar doing all the work she's doing, it's very considered. There's a very conscious effort to put these sort of soul groups together, these soul families together, the way that she's doing it. I think in our case, it happened synchronistically. So I think the people who were supposed to be there were part of the same spirit family and did find their way there. But then certainly after spending that kind of time together and having these powerful, emotional, and also, you know, exuberant, joyous experiences together, you really are bonded, and we really became family. And we had a little reunion last weekend where about half of us got together in upstate New York at one of the at the home of one of the couples who was on the trip. And unfortunately, Catherine couldn't join us. But it was a real tribute to how close we all became in just those 7 days that we had to have a reunion 2 months later because we couldn't stand to be apart.
We missed each other so much. And it never ceases to amaze me how we came together as a family immediately. I think the first night at the cocktail party, everybody was chatting up like they'd known each other for years, or we were at a family reunion where perhaps we hadn't seen each other in years and we were just catching up. But there was never a place of awkwardness from the moment we all got to the chateau. It was like this was meant to be. We were all there for a specific reason. We were brought together through the love of your books. And, of course, you know, that gave us all purpose and power in coming together. But that feeling of being back with our family was uppermost in everybody's mind and heart.
Well, it's reunion. I mean, that's the word that keeps coming back to me. It's reunion, reunion, reunion. The only thing sweeter than union is reunion. And that's where the time returns comes from. And for those who have read my books, you'll see that over and over, particularly in the Book of Love and the Poet Prince, you will see this constant reference to the time returns, which has been sort of the secret password of the bloodline group for 2,000 years, the time returns, which is remembering that we're going to continue to come back and do this together, that we have made this promise to come back and do this together. And when we do come back together and we do recognize each other, it's such an overwhelmingly beautiful sense of love and excitement. And that is what is happening. And I have a feeling we're all going to be really blessed to experience a lot more of that this year.
Oh, I think that's what this year is designed for. I know starting at the turn of this century in 2000, I was doing a lot of work in the Yucatan, taking lots of groups down there and taking people to the temple ruins so that they could understand more about the Mayan calendar and what the Mayan calendar had to say about 2012. And I remember interviewing John Calliman, and he was saying that 2012 is all about understanding that it is no longer the love of power, but the power of love that motivates us in life. And that's what we've come to. It is the power of love. And that's what your books are all about, the power of love. And everyone feels that power the moment they're in your presence. Pick up one of your books. They certainly have the opportunity to take this trip with you to France.
Lavendar, are you there?
I'm here.
Can you talk a little bit about this whole concept of, you know, we always call it, in my groups, we call it spirit family and soul family, and this idea of connection and reunion. I'd like to hear a little bit more about that from your point of view and the way that you're sort of designing this.
Well, when I first started tracking discovery of star markings, I was just looking at the 25, 26, 27 degrees and charts to a certain extraterrestrial experiment, bloodline experiment on the planet. And it first started with a group from Ohio. I started finding a lot of women that started having connecting charts, and they were born in different years, but they started all having the same kind of markings that were speaking of Cathar, France, Atlantis, Athena, the 96, and I said, oh my goodness, this discovery of star markings part two is really showing me that there's a way to track the groups. And that's how it first started, and it's been going on now for about a year and a half. And of course, when I find anyone that has these markings, I will certainly say to them, well, you need to pick up Kathleen McGowan's books, and start with the expected one. And if you're reading it and if it rings true for you, you let me know. So every time I would say that to someone, they would email me back and say, oh, thank you so much. Oh, yes, I definitely can identify with the Cathars or whatever it was that I brought up in their charts. And so the confirmation of what I was seeing and then the feedback from my clients, you know, just kind of propelled me to keep tracking and to keep, a note of what I was doing. And I started really understanding that this has been planned for a very, very long time by those upstairs in order to bring together soul groups on the planet. And it now that we have the internet and email and the new technologies on the planet, it makes it more convenient for soul groups to find one another. So that's basically how I've been doing it, is finding these different combinations. Now, sometimes I'll be talking to someone, and maybe they don't really have the markings in their chart, but something will kick in, and I will start tracking them through their bloodlines. So like their mother or grandmother. And I'll say, well, give me your mother or grandmother's birth date. And sure enough, they're the ones that have the markings. So they pass it on through the bloodline.
Ah.
And it's just been amazing to me to see the synchronization of the way these groups are starting to come together. And as I've been sitting and looking at these charts these past 2 weeks, it's been many times difficult to say, well, this group here and this group there, and it's like, oh my goodness, great if we could just big 747 airplane and fill it up and just let everybody go at once. That's what I'd really like to have happen.
Now, I have a question for you, Lavendar. As you're looking at the charts and you're determining, you know, who's going to go on these trips, has the idea of an overriding theme of what it is that we're going to be doing together or learning together or activating together come to you yet?
Well, it has to do with, first of all, it has to do with the Cathars and what
mm-hmm.
happened there.
Okay.
And it has to do with Jesus and Mary Magdalene, the bloodline, and all the stories that are connected to that. I mean, the streamline of that is huge. It's just huge.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that those that are going on this first trip, you know, this has been designed, you know, for a very long time. And I'm just hoping that I'm able to bring together the group as being shown to me by looking at the charts and placing them in the manner that will be synchronistic to their lives and to the stories and to the land. I also feel like the land is going to remember people. You know, it's one thing to go and say, I want to go there because I want to remember. Well, how about the land? The land will remember a lot of people that show up because there's another intelligence that has been there in this place for a very long time, from the Devic kingdoms on. So it'll be a very exciting experience for anyone that goes, whether it's the first trip, second trip, third trip, whichever trip you decide to take. And I know that it will be a life-changing experience. And
well, I have to attest to what you
to,
say about the land.
Yeah.
I have to attest to what you say because I remember when we all met at the airport in Toulouse and we got on that big, wonderful bus that we traveled all over the south of France in, and just the trip from the airport back to where we were staying. And I was just looking out the window at the land, and I was filled with emotion and started crying on the trip to the hotel, to the chateau, or is it the maison? I can't remember now, Kathleen.
The maison.
And just looking at the land itself evoked such emotion in me, so many memories. And I think for most of the people on the trip, the overriding theme in October was not only to remember the land, to come home, but to live the way of love for that week. Wouldn't you say, Kathleen? I mean, even though we didn't discuss it a lot, everyone had read the books and everybody was living the way of love.
Well, that is absolutely true, and that's another piece of that homecoming, is that for a week you are living in a way that you know it should be. This is the way it should be. You're living in this beautiful community. It's so harmonious. Everyone is coming from this amazing place of love and service and joy and wanting to make the world a better place and wanting to understand and fulfill their mission in it. And mm-hmm. everyone's working together, and there's no outside interference, and you are living the way. And one, you know, the letters I get from people who've been on Sacred France in the last year, a lot of them say the same thing, which is, this made me really understand that it is possible that, you know, this kind of amazing, exquisite, peaceful existence is not only possible, but is what we're supposed to be doing. And I think that's a big piece of the homecoming.
I agree. And I know that for me, it was so much easier to bring that home and to live and think just in a more harmonious way within myself. And of course, the minute you do that, the minute any individual makes that shift for themselves, everything and everyone around them has to shift as well. So to get three trips of star seeds on that page and then to bring them back home to have that, you know, reverberate throughout their lives, that in and of itself is going to be a tremendous contribution to the world.
Well, absolutely.
You know, I was just thinking about the people that live there, the bloodlines that have been actually stationary and holding the point for reunion of star seeds. I'm thinking about, you know, seeing people that we probably haven't seen for a long time that live there. Catherine, did you have that experience meeting people that you felt like you knew?
I can't say with people that we met who lived in France. I don't remember feeling that way. I felt that way with the group. I felt that way with a group of beautiful people that we were traveling together with. But I can't say that I did. Well, maybe Annika.
Mm-hmm.
Am I pronouncing that right, Kathleen?
Yeah, Annika.
Annika, yeah. I did. I think I did have that sense with her. But several people in the group, it was like, oh, yeah, I've known you forever. It's so nice to see you again.
But Lavendar, I have had that experience, and that those people in the south of France are my family, absolutely, 100%. I got there, and I immediately felt like I was home. And then over the course of the last years that I have been spending a lot of time there with the people, and it's interesting because it's a mixed group. Some of them are local people, people who have been there for a very long time, and some of them are people who have come from other parts of Europe because they have been called there as well. So, for example, Annika is Dutch, as is her husband Peter, who is our logistics man and tour director and all-around just fantastic grail knight who takes care of all of us, doesn't he, Catherine?
Yes, he was unbelievable.
And, we have Toby and Gerda who run the garden at Rennes Le Chateau, which is some of the most sacred ground in the world. They're German-born, but they were called to this place in 1995, actually the same month that I was. So a lot of this has been happening. In 1995, a lot of us, including Philip, myself, Toby and Gerda, at separate times, but in the same month in 1995, were all called home to this place. And we didn't know each other at the time, but all of us separately in that same time period took a vow that we were coming home to this place and that we were going to work for the rest of our lives on doing what the land was calling us to do. And then over the course of the next years, we were all brought together and have become this very, very wonderful, strong, beautiful spirit family. I mean, those people are my family, absolutely.
Well, Lavendar, I would like to comment that the week after Kathleen was on the show, like 2 weeks ago, the week following that, I had probably 9 out of 10 people that ordered a starseed confirmation. 9 out of 10 of them had all of the markings for the Cathars, for Jesus, Mary Magdalene, for Atlantis, or for Galactic Center. 9 out of 10 all had those markings. And I thought, we'll just file this. But it was, I don't know what to make of it, but I did notice that pattern.
Well, I noticed it, too. In fact, everyone that contacted me, every one of them had them. Every one.
And what is the marking to have the Jesus Magdalene bloodline in the chart? What does that look like in the chart?
With their 25, 26, 27 degrees of any sign, but mostly if they're connected to Virgo, Pisces, Aquarius, there's different combinations. It's kind of an astrological nightmare of sorts because one may not do it, but a combination of two or three just make the whole chart come alive, and it just activates a whole lot of records that happens inside my head when it takes place. So, and because of the way I'm put together and mm-hmm. the tracking systems that I do have in my physical body, that's one reason it's kind of hard for me to train anyone else to do what I do.
Mm-hmm.
Because it, I go very, very far in a person's records once I start, because of my technology.
And how long have you, or when did you discover the Jesus Magdalene markings? Did that come after this whole process started of the star markings?
No, actually, I've had them for some time, but I didn't know what mm-hmm. to do with them. I knew they were there, but I didn't. I wasn't aware of what was going to be happening when I started doing charts, you know, finding the soul groups. I've known about them for a long time. It just didn't click for me that it was going to come together as a whole nother part two of discovery of star markings.
And so did it click after you read Kathleen's book?
Well, yes, I had it before that, but then when I read her book, that's when I started, you know, when I finished reading her book, that's when the women from Ohio started showing up.
That's so funny, because I was one of them. I mean, I was born in Ohio, and you called me and said, okay, write this down, go get this book, read it this weekend. Like, okay. Because I had not heard of the book. Had you not told me about it, I probably never would have read it. And then once I did, it was like, okay, where's the next one and where's the next one? Because you can't stop reading.
No, you cannot.
You just never want the books to end.
Yes, and she writes, so the way I describe Kathleen is that when I'm reading her words, I'm looking through her eyes as she is writing. It's just the most marvelous feeling, and I know a lot of other people feel that way too. And that is the mark of a really wonderful writer, to be able to show pictures, as instead of telling someone something, you're showing them. You're activating their own records as they're reading. That's a true talent. That is a really true talent. Not everyone can do that.
No, it's very rare, rare.
I could make one of my analogies in that words to Kathleen were like the paint to Botticelli.
Mm.
Oh,
that's
so sweet. Thank you. I'm not worthy of the comparison, but I am honored by it. Thank you.
The comment that you made the last time of how the Botticelli paintings have an energy that is still emanating from the paint and the mm-hmm. and the subjects, and that his intent
absolutely
affects people when they look at the painting. It's not just a two-dimensional, you know, picture on the wall. And your words are the same way. Your words are like three-dimensional, and your intent comes right off the page. So it looks like the same mechanism to me.
Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have to agree with that. Yeah, absolutely. It's her natural state. It's her rites of passage. She's locked into the navigational system of showing people what she's seeing and writing about. It's a true talent.
Well, thank you. I think I was. I think. I mean, it's what I was put here to do. I know that, and I've known it since I was a child. I knew, you know, since I was about 8 years old, that this. I woke up one day and I said to my parents and my grandparents, "I'm going to be a writer. That's it." And I just knew, you know. So I think I was blessed to always have kind of a strong sense of purpose. I always knew that is what I had to do, and that's why I was here. And you know, and I'm just really blessed that, you know, I've been given the instrument in which to do this, in which to convey the information. And, you know, the real blessing is that, you know, all of you out there are actually reading it and taking it in. So, you know, that's the blessing for me. But, you know, one of the things I wanted to go back to in terms of how we design these Sacred France tours, and Catherine can also speak to this, is there's the the Starseed tour that we're putting together has a very heavy Cathar focus. Catherine, the itinerary is very similar to what we did in October. And the reason that we do that is because it covers a lot of territory, but it also covers different periods of time. You're covering sort of different elements of Catharism, different elements of the worship of that came from and through Mary Magdalene. Because what I've discovered is that different people respond to different places at different times. One place may be incredibly profound and life-changing for you one day, and the next day you may be at a place where you think it's beautiful, but it maybe doesn't feel the same way to you. You know, I remember on one of our groups, we had a woman who was really, really sure that one particular place was going to call to her, and she was all set for that to be the place. And she came to me that night, and she said, I need to talk to you. And she said, look, I'm so disappointed because I didn't feel anything in this place. And I was so sure that this was the place that was, you know, really going to wake me up and I was going to respond to. And I didn't feel anything. And I said, first of all, you need to stop putting so much pressure on yourself. This isn't a test. You just need to relax into the experience and see what happens. And just because this wasn't the place doesn't mean there's not going to be another place tomorrow. And I will tell you, the funny thing is the next day, she had some of the most profound experiences I have ever witnessed, including the things that she captured on her camera. She captured lights in the sky and objects in the sky and things reflected that you couldn't see otherwise. She had the most extraordinary experience and responded completely to a place that she didn't really expect to at all. And that was her grand awakening, and she said it was the best day of her life. And so what we try to do with the way we've designed the itinerary is make sure that there are a lot of different kinds of experiences that span different types of information and different kinds of events so that everyone has an opportunity to awaken to the place in time that might be the most harmonious for them.
Well, I have to say that was true. That was true on our trip. Every day was action-packed. I mean, we were going all day. And yet the experiences, it was kind of like, I don't want to compare it to a roller coaster because I don't really like roller coasters, but we would go from one experience and like you were saying, it could take me to a particular emotional high, and then the next one would be very calming, so that we kind of gear up for the next exciting thing. The first morning when we went to, you'll have to help me, Carcassonne?
Yes.
And we drove up to this castle, and there was a film crew because they were filming, I believe, the labyrinth there.
Yes, Kate Moss.
While we were there that day, but I had never experienced anything like that. I had the hugeness, the vastness, the grandness of it all was absolutely breathtaking. And then, so we go from that really tremendous high to a lovely lunch in one of the villages where everything just kind of calmed down and everyone had a chance to share. And then we were off to the next adventure. So the pace and the timing of the trip is absolutely impeccable.
Well, we did try to design it very carefully. What we're also trying to do now is add a couple of special things that are very, very specific to this Starseed group, including, you know, we're trying to secure the ability to get into the 14th century church that has the Pleiades painted over the altar and is considered a very specific temple that involves star worship. So there's a couple of places like that that we really want to be able to take this group to. And it's just a question of, you know, working through how things are in France. You know, for those of you who have never been to rural France, getting into a 14th century church usually means that some woman, usually in her, you know, 80s, somewhere in a village holds a key and you have to find her. Or the mayor has it. And you have to make sure that you can get an appointment with the mayor or his assistant or that they're in that day or they're not at lunch, because lunches in France are very, very long. So it's not like here where you can make an appointment and things happen. There's a lot of finesse that has to happen in terms of, you know, becoming a part of the community and making them understand that we're coming there for the right reasons and that we're coming there respectfully. And so all these things have to happen in order for us to make sure that it's all seamless for you by the time that you get there. So even though this group won't be there for another 5 months, you know, we are well underway trying to make these things happen already, because it can take that long to make sure that you have the experience we want you to have.
Well, Ariel, do we have a lot of people calling in tonight?
Oh, yeah. First of all, I want to get Sierra on the line here, our co-host Sierra, who's been, I'm sure, listening intently. Hello, Sierra. You're on the air.
Hello, ladies. It's so, so good to be here with you.
Hi, Sierra.
I have been listening and have been just so enthralled, and I'm so, so excited about this trip, and I just am looking forward to meeting the both of you and spending time with you and the rest of the Starseed family.
Well, it's going to be magical, and that's all we know, and I think that's the best way, is it not like the lady that Kathleen was describing. If you don't have any pressure on yourself or expect something to be one way, you just have to go there without expectations and just let it unfold. That's part of the magical mystery of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Try not to have cherished outcome.
Right.
Absolutely.
Well, Sierra, you know, we're all we're counting on you to get us up that 3,000-foot hike in one piece.
I am so excited about that. I used to guide people down into the Grand Canyon who were going down to raft trips and coming out of raft trips, and it's just a passion of mine. So I'm just happy to be able to assist wherever I can.
We have a couple of really good climbs on this trip, you know, into Cather country, and it's an amazing thing to do. It's not impossible, believe me. Montsegur, which is the last one, is the most difficult, and that is why we sort of leave it for last, because you can work your way up to it. There's another beautiful castle region that we go to called Les Tours, where there are actually four castles built into the region, and you climb up to those, and that is also a bit of a hike. But definitely, if we have someone who can help us and inspire us and get us up there, the weather in early May should be beautiful. It shouldn't be too hot. It should be gorgeous and springy. So I think that that will help us. But I don't want people to be intimidated. I mean, the hiking is fairly strenuous on two of the days, but everyone, there's plenty of time. No one's rushed. Everyone can go at their own pace. And what I always say about Montsegur is there is something magical about that mountain. And we call that mountain a she. That mountain is referred to and has been for thousands of years as female. She helps you up the mountain. There is this magical energy that helps you to move forward when you're trying to make that climb. So, and it is a path. You're on a path. It's rocky and it's not even, and it can be steep in places, but it's a hiking trail, so don't be afraid of it.
Well, yeah, Philip said that people have gone up there on crutches, which that is, it's like, okay, just know that I'm going to be working out for the next 3 months to make sure that I can have plenty of energy and really, not have soreness the next day. But I'm so looking forward to it. And I was, looking at the map of southern France, and then I realized that that's where my great-grandfather came from. And on my mother's side, they're from Milan, which is just across the border. I don't think it's that far from the Cathar region. So
no, not only is it not far, but that part of Italy, that area around Lombardy is Cathar country. It's after the Cathars were persecuted from France. A lot of them ended up, especially in the 1300s, in that area around what is now Milan. So that's very interesting, because it sure feels like you've got Cathar connections on both sides there.
Well, that's what I had this just like dawn of awakening. It's like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize that Milan was that, you know, that part of the world as well. So yeah, I've got it on both sides, and they just came over at the turn of the century. My great grandmother's brought my, you know, her family over here. So I'm really excited. I've always wanted to visit the land of my ancestors, but little did I know that this is how it was going to occur.
How thrilling.
I'm very excited. Well, we do have a lot of people waiting to speak with Kathleen and Catherine and Lavendar, so shall we just open up the switchboard now?
Sure. Absolutely. Go for it.
Okay, and Sierra, you can handle your own microphone. We are going
Absolutely.
To, okay, this first person we're going to bring on was invited to call by Lavendar. This is Sandy. Sandy, you are on the air.
Well, hello, thank you for having me. Hi, Lavendar.
Hello, Sandy, glad you called.
Yes, Kathleen McGowan, I want to thank you so much for your book. It was recommended for me to read it, and I cried throughout. And when I read it, it brought back memories of myself. I saw the bottom part of Jesus' feet, and it shocked me and horrified me to where all I could do was cry and say, I'm sorry. And the book brought it back to me. And then another time, I was in a room, and I saw Jesus and the apostles eating, and I didn't understand how I could see them as if I was in the room with them, and everything was so real and alive that it shocked me, and it brought me out. But I guess the most memorable memory was when I was alone, and this man came to me, and he reminded me of Jesus because he was so beautiful. And he came to me, and we talked, and he took me aside. And without speaking, he told me I could trust him. And I guess I was having trust issues because he told me I would never, ever have to doubt that he would ever let me down, that he would always love me no matter what. And then when I realized it, I gasped because I really felt it in my heart and soul. So when he hugged me, I remember that we meshed into this gold light, into where we became one. And then he disappeared, and I was by myself. So the book brought all these wonderful memories, and I want to say thank you.
Oh, thank you, and thank you for sharing that. It's so beautiful. And, you know, one of the things that struck me as you were telling the story is, you know, I've heard from several women who have these memories of being at the Last Supper. And you know, it's one of the things that women have been stripped from in terms of, you know, artistic depictions and even, you know, literary mentions. You know, people don't talk about the fact that there were women at the Last Supper. We're only supposed to think that it was, you know, Jesus and the 12. But the fact is that there were women there. And it's very interesting when you start doing some digging in places like Italy, Lucca, which is one of the real sacred places in Italy, and I write about that in the Book of Love. In San Martino's Cathedral in Lucca, there's a very, very beautiful painting of the Last Supper by an artist named Tintoretto. It's one of my favorite paintings because it depicts the Last Supper with, and there are women in it, and there are women on the floor, one's nursing a baby, and it shows this family environment, which is exactly what it would have been like. And so I love when I hear stories like yours that feel, you know, so real and so present and so authentic to me, as opposed to this sort of whitewashed version we've been handed, where we're supposed to believe that women were stripped out of everything.
Yes, and your book brought to me a confirmation that I always felt in my heart, that Magdalene was more than just an apostle. And I believed in my heart that there was more that everybody was not allowing out, and you were brave enough to bring it out, and I want to thank you very much for that. Many blessings.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Thanks, Sandy. Bye-bye. Okay. Next up, we are going to hear from our sweet Joseph. Hello, Joseph. You're on the air.
Hello, Arielle. And, oh, my beloved sisters.
Hi, Joseph.
Hi there, all of you. I love you. I had to come to a very heartbreaking decision. Actually, it wasn't my decision at all, that I'm not going to be able to go on the tour with you.
Oh.
In 1988, I was led to all the places in Europe that I had had lifetimes, and there were completions in all of them, and one of them was France and Germany and Italy. In Assisi, I was there and with Francis and Claire, and I had watched Brother Sun, Sister Moon before I went, and I realized that when Francis had his awakening, his epiphany, he walked to Rome to ask the Pope what he should do, and the Pope that he spoke to was Innocent III, who sent the troops into Languedoc for the massacre of the Cathars.
Yes.
And I didn't know what to do with that. I wanted to say, stop him, stop him, stop him, and there was no way to stop him. So that was my experience with the Cathars consciously. I feel like a kid on Christmas morning. I don't know which package to open next. I have to say thanks to Catherine. Catherine, your suggestion on vitamin D3 has literally saved my sight. The doctors have no idea why it worked, but you and I know why it worked, and it did, and I'm totally restored to perfect vision. So
I am so happy to hear that.
Wow.
I am thrilled to hear that, Joseph. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. It has been an amazing process. Next, when my doctor finally said, I've never seen anybody recover from macular degeneration. And I said, well, I took vitamin D3, even though you said it wouldn't do any good. And he said, when we remove your cataracts, you will have 20/20 vision.
Oh, fantastic.
That's
amazing.
It is fantastic. And I've told so many people, please, please add that to your protocol for whatever you're doing for your eyes.
Right.
I guess I have to say, what has been shown to me, Lavendar, is my job in all of this. While you all are in France, my job is to stand here in this beautiful town I live in, you know where that is, and receive that energy and broadcast it to the whole United States, North America, South America, and as far as I can around the world. You told me when you did my chart, my job was to bring something amazing to the feminine principle on the planet. And that's what it will be. I feel that so strongly. As much as I'd love to be with you all, my work is here. And know that I will be with you on the inner planes. You'll see me walking right next to you there. But my physical body will be here in Colorado. I live right on the Continental Divide. So it's such an extraordinary place to direct energy. Part will flow to the Atlantic, part to the Pacific. No coincidences here.
Well, you can be our anchor here in the States while we're all doing our thing over there in France.
It's exactly what it feels like, yes.
Well, one of the things I wanted to tell you, Joseph, and I don't know if you found any of this in your studies of St. Francis. I've also spent a lot of time in Assisi, and there will eventually be a book for me about Francis and Claire and their relationship, because they were the living Jesus and Magdalene on earth, and they knew it, and they were consciously it. And what
Absolutely.
Most people don't understand about Francis or don't know about Francis is that his mother was a Cathar. His mother was from the Bourlamont family in the region of Tarascon, which is where Martha and Lazarus actually settled. And his mother was a descendant of that family. So she actually moved to Italy when she fell in love with Bernardone, who was on a merchant trip in France. He was in Provence. He met her in Provence and brought her back to Italy with him. And so what most people don't know is that, you know, Francis's birth name was Giovanni.
Yes.
He became known as Francis because his mother referred to him as my little French boy because he was the most like her Cathar family. So she called him my little Francesco, which is how we know him today as Francis. But that was all reference to his Cathar heritage. So Francis was living that and understood it in ways that have been erased. And again, whitewashed so that, you know, we don't have that Jesus Magdalene understanding. But it's all there for those guys to see, don't you think?
Absolutely. And I felt it the whole time I was there. They were walking on either side of me. I stayed in a 13th century guest house that had been there that they had walked past while they were living in Assisi. It was the most extraordinary experience. And thank you for sharing that so clearly, Kathleen. I see it now, and I knew it then, but you've expressed it in a way that has touched me very, very deeply.
I'm glad.
I'd like to share something that happened to me that was very similar to what happened to Joseph. In 1996, I took a tour with the ARE that was called In the Footsteps of St. Francis. And on a trip to San Damiano, which was the convent of the Poor Clares, I remember climbing up the stairs and going into this empty room where I immediately saw these straw mattresses on the ground, on the floor, and I knew that this is where I had slept with my sisters. And I walked over to a window, and I looked out into a courtyard where the well was, and I just fell to pieces. I didn't even understand why. I was crying so hard. I was so deeply moved. And I remembered pumping the water from that well. And then I was overcome with the feelings of love that Claire and Francis had for one another. And I had not read anything about them before. I had not seen a movie about them, but I felt it. I knew it in every cell of my body. And then, of course, I came home after that and started doing research and understood that, you know, that how much they had loved one another. But that was an experience. And even the people on the tour were like, are you okay? Are you going to be all right? Can you make it back to the hotel? I didn't know that I could. I have never had that kind of experience in my life.
I'm jumping in my skin here, Catherine, because I had that identical experience in San Damiano. I'm telling you.
No, you didn't.
Yes,
oh, my
did.
Oh,
well,
my God. Oh, my God.
So did I, ladies. I walked into that room. I know exactly where you're talking about. I fell in the middle of the floor. I could not move, and there were a huge number of people, you know, coming into the little church. And I pulled myself over against the wall and got in a meditative position, and I sat there until I could recover my senses and stand up. And I turned and I put my hands on the wall, and as I came up, there was a plaque that said, on this spot, Claire died.
Oh, my gosh.
My crown chakra was wide open, and it was like somebody was pouring white light into through a funnel in the top of my head. If that's not an overshadowing, I don't know what is.
That's amazing.
And
I think
Catherine, you and I have a date in San Damiano.
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. And I think it was like a week after we were there, 2 weeks maybe, the terrible earthquake hit and destroyed...
Yes.
Destroyed the church, yeah. But, I mean, I will never forgive that. I forget that as long as
no,
I live. Ever.
Not
ever.
I. Did you go into the cathedral of Claire and walk down and see her body under glass?
Yeah, it's extraordinary.
I don't know. We did not do that.
Well, it's just like looking at her. It's amazing.
Wow.
She has not deteriorated at all.
How amazing.
Yeah.
Next trip. I won't miss that.
Yeah. Well, thank you all for giving me so much time to share, but this is just so powerful. I haven't stopped vibrating, Kathleen, since your last show. I don't know what's going to happen after this one.
but look at what just happened here and how beautiful it is. I mean, you just shared that story, and then it brought Catherine to this story, and it's the same. We all have had this same experience in this same place at different times. And that is the magic that's happening here. That's the synchronicity. That's the awakening. And most of all, that's the truth, right? Because when we're all having this same experience in the same place, that's the truth.
It's the truth.
Exactly.
It's the truth. And this is the year, you know, in 2012, the return of the Christ consciousness, the return of the feminine wisdom. And we're all doing it. We're every single one of us, whether we're aware of it or not, you know, we are holding the anchor for that love and that consciousness to return to the planet. And I'm just so thrilled to be a part of it.
Oh, yes. I know there are other people who want to contribute, but thank you all so much. It's just, and I will be with you. There's no way I'm not going on this trip, but I'm going to be here to anchor the energy here as well. My location, yes, yes.
That's great, Joseph, and we will raise a glass to you.
Thank you, my darling. Thank you.
Thank you, Joseph. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Well, that's incredible. Look at what just happened live on the air, folks.
You never know.
We do have a very, very full switchboard here. Let me go down here and pick up the next caller. This is Chris in Wyoming. Hello, Chris. You're on the air.
Oh, hello, everyone. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
I have a question for Kathleen, but I want to tell you this first, that I was led to Lavendar, had my first reading with her in early December. She recommended, expected one, by the end of December, I'd read the trilogy, and I just finished the expected one for the second time, so see what you've done. And I also want to add that I was so impressed with Sandra's visions, and I really had the expectation that, you know, I might have visions like that, dream visions like that. But instead, my visions, stimulated by the first reading of the expected one, were of being on a spaceship. So I just thought I'd throw that in there. So your comments about the blue apples and the history of that really helped me put it in perspective. But my burning question is, in the expected one, when you describe the discovery of the Ark Gospels of Mary Magdalene, and I was wondering if you could speak about that.
I can.
Okay.
The way that I describe the discovery of the Ark Gospels in the expected one is fiction. However, there are Ark Gospels. As a matter of fact, there are all kinds of documents that are held in the southwest of France by different families, different groups that have been passed down at different times. So there's a number of very interesting documents, you know, some that I have certainly never seen because people are very protective there and very very closed with the information. Although I will say something that I'm seeing that is exciting is that for the first time, I think, in 2,000 years, people are starting to open up. And more things are being allowed to sort of come to the surface and come to air. For me, what happened was when I was in the southwest of France, I became close to some people there who became very much like my family. I had a teacher who is very much, who's the Destino character is based on a teacher that I had in France. Mm-hmm. Who introduced me to a lot of this material, and he was actually also the first one who taught me about the prophecy of the expected one, the first person who actually sort of introduced me to this whole idea that there had been a prophetess lineage, really woke me up to my family history, the Pascal family history in the region, all of these things. So what, you know, here's the beautiful thing about fiction is, and the ironic thing about fiction is it gives you a lot more freedom to tell the truth than nonfiction. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, in writing nonfiction, there you have to be very careful and you have to, you know, everyone wants to know, well, where did you get that piece of information and who has it and who's holding these documents? And people get very tied up in that kind of stuff. And I didn't want people to do that. I wanted people to feel the information that I was giving them, the way that I felt it. Because when I was first told this version of the story that is in the Ark Gospel, I was told it verbally. It was told to me as a story. Here is a story of how we have preserved this history here, and see how you feel about it. So that's how it was originally presented to me as oral tradition. And then I discovered that it came from a document that was discovered in the region around Ark. Ark is a little tiny sort of village. There's a castle there about 5 or 6 miles outside of Rennes-le-Château. Very, very beautiful, but very magical place, like everything mm-hmm. else in this region. It has a very strong Catholic connection. And it's one of the places where a number of documents have been discovered over the last several hundred years. And so this particular teacher that I had was one of the guardians of some of those documents, and he was the one who took me through the original information. Now, what I do want to say is this. A lot of what happens in the Expected One as well was inspired. I actually did have those visions that actually brought me to those places.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that I'm very careful to do is research. I don't just take inspired material. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I'm still in my, you know, I think in my core, I've got Virgo rising, so I still in mm-hmm. my core have to do that digging. I want to back it all up. So, you know, I never took anything at face value. Like when I first found out that there was this prophecy about this expected one, Le Tendu, it's called in French,
mm-hmm.
And I wanted to know if this was real, you know, aside from the fact that it was fascinating and really interesting, and of course it sort of applied to me and, you know, all of those things, but I wanted to know. And I spent years trying to find that prophecy. And the funny thing is, and this is actually one of my favorite stories about synchronicity, someone gave me a book in 2003. I had been writing the Expected One for 10 years, and it went through a lot of changes because I would be, oh, can I put this in? Do I dare? How are people going to react to this? I originally took out all the John the Baptist stuff because I thought it was going to freak people out and they weren't ready for it. And then, you know, so I went through a lot of dark nights of the soul with this book. This book took me 10 years to write because I really had to find a lot of courage in really deep places to tell parts of this story, which were very scary for me, you know, at that time. I'm not afraid of any of it anymore, but, you know, I was still a baby then in so many ways, you know. And, you know, I just getting to the core of the story was really important. And one of the things for me was it was the silly little thing that if I could prove that the prophecy of the Expected One really existed, if I could just find some evidence of it in writing somewhere, that it would all be okay. And so in 2003, somebody gave me a book called Nostradamus and the Lost Templar Legacy, which was written by a brilliant, brilliant Belgian professor named Rudy Combier. And Rudy Combier had gone, his work involved searching the archives of the Belgian abbeys, the medieval Belgian abbeys, including Orval, which of course is Matilda's abbey that I write about in the Book mm-hmm. of Love, mm-hmm. and Cambronne, which is a neighboring abbey, and finding the original prophecy documents that existed in both of those abbeys. And Rudy Combier goes on to write a book about the fact that all of Nostradamus' prophecies are actually based on prophecies that were found in these Belgian abbeys. And one of the prophecies that he writes about in his book is the prophecy of Le Tendu. So after many years of searching, I was given this book and found the evidence I was looking for that the prophecy was real. Now, the beautiful sort of synchronistic part about this is that book was published originally in French, because Rudy mm-hmm. Combier writes in French. And then there was a Dutch publisher who also published in French, who found that the information was so interesting and had this overwhelming passion to see it in English and get it disseminated. So he had it translated into English and published it in 2003. And that Dutch publisher was a man named Philip Coppens, who I am now married to.
Fantastic.
And
story.
So in all these amazing ways, we were working together, and the synchronicities and the you know, the threads were tying together way back from the 90s to now.
Amazing. Well, I just have one more comment, is that I've been searching for Mary Magdalene for years, since I first heard about her being in France, and I was not determined to go, I just had to go, you know. But everything I read about it did not give me any answers or ring really true until I stumbled on to you. So I really want to thank you for that.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. And I hope that I believe that I have painted the most accurate picture of her story based on the way it is held by these people in France. And they have certainly held it close to their hearts for 2,000 years. And I'm so glad that it works for you and rings true for you and has helped you.
Yes, it does. Without a doubt, it is true. So thank you very much. Thanks for talking to me.
Thank you very much,
Chris. We appreciate your calling in. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Well, we have, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 more callers with questions and 40 minutes left. So everyone try to be brief because we may have more people that want to come on the air. So next we are going to Marianne. Hang on a second. Marianna, your mic is open now. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hello. Hi.
Is it Marianna?
Hi. Well, Marianna.
Marianna, okay.
Yeah, it doesn't look like that spelled, though, because it's Irish. So, anyway, I am so excited about all this, and I love the book. I absolutely love the book, and everything that you wrote about it. Oh, gosh. I told Lavender a couple of weeks ago, it was like, you know, a gun dog in the Hops 49 or whatever it is. It's like when I got the first email about the possibility of the trip, I was just shaking. It was like, that is something. Okay. It starts explaining why I've always had this need to write about Mary Magdalene and more. A Mary, and my mother was a Mary, and church, you know, kind of everything up. But reading the way that it's being written, it's like it feels truth, and that's all I need to do. And so everything that I'm hearing, I'm loving this. And Catherine, I know you and his work, we've met years ago. And so it feels really wonderful to even be a part of this because I'm just so excited. Thank you for that. I don't really have a question at the moment, but
well, I would like to say, first of all, I love that your name is Muira Anya because you're an Irish girl like me. And Marianne's are very special. I always say that a Marianne is a real double-barrel name, especially in the south of France, because the other thing that you will see when you are down there is the presence of St. Anne and how important St. Anne is to the people down there, because St. Anne represents the wisdom keeper. St. Anne is the grandmother. She is the wisdom keeper, and you will see many, many, many figures of St. Anne throughout the south of France presenting the wisdom to her daughter. And for the people there, it's not simply a question of Anne teaching, you know, her daughter Mary to read. She is actually she's an archetype. She's a powerful symbol of how in their tradition the elder women in the community were the great teachers and wisdom keepers who then pass this information on to the girls. So to be a Mary and an Anne in the same name is a very powerful and blessed thing.
Wow, thank you. And you know, also, it starts with the 13th letter of the alphabet. It was, you know, for years my name was 13 letters, my full name. And I just, you know, I my mom maybe didn't know, but see, our memory is deeper than memory. There's so much more to it. And that's the path that I've been on since my 40s. That is just remembering and finding out and helping other women to remember. And so this to me is so exciting that it's you know, we're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
We're really doing it. And that message, even from the time I was a child, is like I knew they had the message wrong. It's just, you know, you're focusing on the wrong thing. And so finally, you know, I'm so happy that in my lifetime, the message is coming clear that what it really is. So thank you for having the guts to do this, because, you know, it took a lot, and that's really powerful, you know?
Thank you.
So thank you so much, and I look forward to meeting you all.
I look forward to meeting you too.
Thank you. We'll see you in a few months.
Yeah, okay. You will.
Okay.
Well done. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. We have another caller. I'm trying to take callers who have been waiting the longest, so we're kind of going in that order. Well, I'm looking for Lynn was on the line, Lavendar, and now she's gone. So we'll go to the next caller. This is Lori. Hello, Lori. You're on the air. Hello, Lori. Can you hear me? Is your mute button on?
Hi, Ariel. Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, great. Great. You have questions about the tour?
I do, but first I just want to say I'm so excited. And, you know, ever since I read Kathleen's books, I've been listening to her and Philip on many of their own radio shows. And, of course, I've been listening to Starseed Hotline for over a year now. And it's going to be so exciting to be on this tour because I feel like I kind of know everybody already. And I'm really looking forward to giving you guys the opportunity to learn more about me. But one thing I want to say real quick before I have my question is that in Kathleen's books, and I've read all three of them, I learned so much. I learned more in those books about religion and about the way it's really supposed to be than anything else that I've come across in my life. And I am so grateful for that because when my husband and I got married, we got married in 1990. And, by the way, we were in France in 1995 as well. So something up there on 1995. I don't know what,
definitely.
But that's just amazing to me. And that's the first time we went was in 1995. But when my husband and I got married, we joined a church so we could get married because we weren't churchgoers. And I just remember being so overwhelmed with emotion in the services, and I had no idea why. I would just leave in tears, and I was so embarrassed that after we were married, we stopped going. It was too painful for some reason, and I don't think it was painful in a hurtful way. I think my heart was opening, and I didn't know what to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And having the opportunity to go on this trip, I think, is going to be really amazing. And my question is, where do I go to register?
Ariel?
I can tell you that you will have an email because this is, of course, by invitation only, so I don't want to put it out on the air. We have a list, and you are on the list, so you will be getting an email with the place to register as well as a link that you can click to make your deposit. So be looking for that in the next day or so.
Okay, wonderful.
Okay, but
you are
on the list. And I don't want to say your last name, but is this going to be a special anniversary trip for you and your husband?
It is. It's going to be my husband and I, our 22nd wedding anniversary. And I thought that the 22nd is the feminine energy. And I thought, oh, well, we've just got to do something with this. So let's go to France and, you know, let's renew our vows while we're there. So we're hoping to have that ceremony. And I know that Sierra is a minister, and we would be thrilled and honored to have her provide that service for us if she's willing.
That would be my honor, absolutely. I would love that.
We have to make sure that your authority is going to be recognized in France because we want it to be legal and everything in order, but that would be a wonderful thing that we'll all participate with that, and it'll be very, very special and memorable moment.
Mm. Yeah.
I do have one question for you. I am a minister, an Episcopalian minister, but I'm also a medicine woman. So, whichever way you want me to show up inside of, whether you want me in native dress, whether you want me in different, so we'll get together. We'll plan it, darling. It'll be so fabulous.
Oh my gosh.
And if there's anything I can do to help you, please let me know. If you want me to put together anything for the Book of Love or anything that resonates with you guys, you let me know, and I'd be happy to contribute that too.
Oh,
it will be
absolutely.
A community wedding.
Oh, absolutely. And one other thing, too, is Richard is my husband. We were saying, you know, we don't really care if it's recognized in French law. We want to do this for us and for the group and under divine law. You know what I'm saying?
I'm with you, sister. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know what? Yeah. You know what? Now that you said that, I forgot that you're already married.
No, we're just bringing it up. You're already married,
so, you know, yeah, it's a ceremonial thing. So, yeah, forget about whatever I just said. Okay.
We did a vow renewal ceremony in one of the gardens there a couple of years ago with a couple that was with us, and it was absolutely magical. It was truly special. So I think, you know, that you want to do that there and that we would be able to participate in it is, I think, an honor and a joy for all of us.
Oh, thank you so much. And I'll just, wherever you think is best and whenever it fits in the schedule, that's fine with us. So,
excellent.
We'll give you some options. We'll go through the schedule and see, you know, where it can happen and if you want to happen day or night or that kind of thing. And we'll come up with some ideas for you.
Okay, that sounds wonderful. I am so thrilled. Thank you so much.
Great. It's going to be a treasured memory. So, well,
absolutely.
Lori, we will reunite in a few months.
Okay, looking forward to it.
Thank you so much for calling.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
See you soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, let's see, we still have a few more callers with questions, and I'm going to try to get to everybody, but we do have a really full switchboard, so... just everyone try to keep your questions or comments as concise as you can. Okay, we are going next to Barbara. Hello,
yes.
Barbara, you're on the air.
Hi, how's everybody?
Great.
Wonderful.
Great. I just got to know all of you ladies, so to speak, about 3 weeks ago. I discovered a Starseed Hotline and Catherine and just everything just kind of hit at one time. But I wanted to mention... is that about 2 years ago, I had a dream that I discovered the three things that say Christianity is not true as we know it today. And after that, I was told to move to France and change my name to Dawn. Well, I still didn't have any idea what was going on. I managed to move to France, but it was ahead of time. Had a good experience, bad experience there, and wound up having to come back to the States, which was like pulling teeth. And then I run into you ladies. All about Dawn in France and Madonna, not Madonna, Mary Magdalene, I'm so sorry. And I ran into the two Marys everywhere I went in France. Carcassonne and a couple of other places, I was surrounded constantly by orbs, light orbs. And they made me feel like I was high, just giggly and bubbly. But this is fascinating to me for so many reasons, but it's coming back to what I was told to do, and I couldn't understand why until I'm just now beginning to learn why. I've yet to get the books. I'm going to get those. But this has been just fantastic. I look forward to this show every week so I can learn more, and I thank you for this.
One of the things that's interesting about your name and being asked to change it is Barbara is a very, very important saint in our story here, and one of the things that I'm writing about is Barbara is often associated with the Magdalene because she's always shown with the tower, and that Barbara comes from the tower is something that makes her a piece of the Magdalene line. But what most people miss and don't know, and this is something that you know, I'm putting more solidly into one of my forthcoming books, is that the legend of St. Barbara is actually the legend of Mary Magdalene's daughter and her lineage. So anytime you see references to St. Barbara with the tower, it's telling you this is a reference to women of the Magdalene bloodline, because Magdalene, the word Magdalene actually means of the tower, comes from the word Migdal, which is tower. So that's why you see the tower all the time with her as a symbol. And this happens over and over again. And then, so Barbara, you'll see Barbara, you know, her legend is that she's locked up in this tower, right? Her father locks her up in the tower. Well, let's think about that for a minute. Her patriarch locks her up in a tower to silence her because she will not do his bidding, because she will not marry the person he chooses for her. She only wants to marry for love. So here we have a girl who stands for the power of love, who is not being obedient to her patriarch, so he locks her up in a tower. Well, this is a metaphor for everything that happens to the women of the bloodline. The patriarch is the church. And when the daughter is completely out of control and will not be contained, then the church silences the daughter, and in the case of St. Barbara, cuts off her head. So this is a metaphor that we see over and over again. The story of Barbara is really the story of the women who were descended from Mary Magdalene who were silenced by the church.
That is amazing. I had no idea. Thank you.
Wow.
So you already have a pretty powerful name.
Yes, I think so. I was told once years ago that if you have a powerful name, don't change it. And I said, okay. And then I'm told to change it, and then I hear, okay. They got to run together.
Don't
maybe
change
Dom's
it.
Getting out of the tower.
Maybe.
Okay, well, thank you so very much. This is so fascinating.
Well, thank you so much for calling, Barbara. And why not just extend your name? Add more to it.
Right, be Barbara
idea.
Dawn.
There you go. Except I'm living in the South.
Well, then that works perfectly.
It's a joke. It's a bad joke around here. Okay. No, Barbara Dawn sounds nice. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Barbara. Thanks for calling. Bye-bye.
Ladies, have a wonderful trip. Thank you.
Oh, we will. Thanks.
Thanks, Barbara.
Okay. Well, we're doing pretty well here. next, we are going to talk to Ralph. Hello, Ralph. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for bringing me on. It's a fascinating show. And I really enjoy the Book of Love. It's just excellent. And as well as the other one.
I knew what you meant.
Yeah. But I had a question. It's one topic, but I want to kind of look at it from a 5,000-foot view, so to speak, looking down on this. And with all the interesting and fascinating things about the trip, I really wish I could go. However, I was wondering if you could speak to how the information that you gather, or the spiritual awakening that you learn about relative to Mary Magdalene and the truth about what has really happened and what humanity has been denied of in terms of the truth relative to what to the power of the feminine feminine energy and the impact that has had in on the planet, and also the impact that has been denied going forward. What do you think that we can do to further kind of help people learn more about the feminine energy and the truth about the history that has impacted us, and going forward to the end of 2012 and beyond, how we can use this to kind of further the cause of enlightening people. If that's not
I think it's a great question, and I'd also love for Catherine to jump in on this question with me too, because I know that she has a lot to say about this return of the divine feminine as well. But, you know, first and foremost, you are doing it. You are doing it because you're opening your mind and your heart and your spirit to all of these new understandings. And that's really the first step. The first step is knowing that we got it wrong and now we can get it right. And then being open to, you know, the ways in which we can do this. And part of that is education. We have to educate ourselves. But that piece of it really only affects the mind. The other piece of it is we have to remember who we are in the great scheme of things. I think that the most important thing you can do is really, really grab on to who you are and what you're here to do and really work on that piece. I think when you find what your own place is, what your own mission is, you may already know and be on that mission. You know, it's really, we're entering this place of absolute service. And when we are in service, we are in the energy of the divine feminine. You know, that's what the divine feminine is. It is an energy of nurturing and harmony, and most of all, service. So I think the best thing that we can do if we want to, you know, we have to be the change we want to see in the world, don't we? And that Ooh. Change has to come from ourselves first and foremost. And so, you know, that number one word for me always when someone says, how do I best connect to the divine feminine, is be of service, because that is what the Great Mother does, right? The Great Mother is always of service to her children, service to the planet, of service to the people. So, you know, it really becomes a question of how do you serve? And part of serving is just being who you are, knowing that you have a special mission that is uniquely your own and that you're here to do that and awaken to that. All of those things are what really bring you into that energy of the divine feminine.
Absolutely, Kathleen, that's an exquisite answer. I just want to add to that that for me, understanding who I am always reminds me that I am here to be the essence and presence of love on Earth. I think we are all here for that reason. And this year, 2012, as we move to Galactic Center, we are being made more and more aware of that every day. And Ralph, I think it's so important that as you go through every day, everyone who's listening, as you go through every day between now and December, in this time period, it will become habit. But ask yourself, check in with yourself ever so often during the day and ask, you know, where am I vibrating? Where am I coming from? Am I coming from love? Because the world we live in today is bombarding us with so much information, so much data, so much stimulation that we've gotten to a point oftentimes where we're just coming from knee-jerk reactions. We're really not thinking about what we're doing. We're just reacting to life to get through to the next moment, to the next chore, to the next thing on our plate. But if we take the time every day to check in, am I coming from love? No matter what the question, love is always the answer, and that is the divine feminine, and that's how she reaches through us into the world, and that's how we are best of service to her and the world. So that's all I wanted to add to that.
Well, thank you very much. That's awesome. I appreciate both of you, and they have a lot of interesting experiences on the trip.
What
kind of experiences you had this time. So thank you very much for that answer. That was right on time. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you for that beautiful question, Ralph. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ralph.
Thanks, Ralph. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Good night.
So that was so well said, ladies, both of you. And I got the impression that we should be loving to the point of infectiousness, to where, you know, because you can't be around someone that's that loving without getting some of it on you, you know. So you just kind of, you spread it around and just let your love be infectious,
exactly,
in a good way, in a very good way,
in a very good way.
Yes. So, well, ladies, we have, I believe, successfully answered everyone's question. So, anything else that anyone would like to add, now is the time.
There was one more thing. Oh, go ahead. Sorry, you go ahead, Catherine.
I just, this real quick, I was thinking about this when Barbara was on the line, and you got off on that wonderful explanation of her name and how powerful that is for her. But she was talking about being in the south of France, and especially at Carcassonne, and being surrounded by orbs. And this was something that was really fascinating to me when I got home and I developed my film. I downloaded my pictures onto my computer, I should say. Every place we went, Kathleen, the photos were filled with orbs. The
amazing,
energy,
isn't it?
Oh, it was so amazing. Even looking out of our hotel room, one morning I took a picture because it was just so beautiful looking at the Pyrenees behind the bed and breakfast, and I just wanted to capture it on film. And it looked like we were in the middle of a snowstorm. There were so many orbs on the picture. You know, the area is just infested with energy, and whether it's extraterrestrial or past life, it's there, and it's teeming with this energy that just surrounds you from the time you wake up in the morning until you go to bed at night, and it's in every single place that we visit. So I just wanted to underscore that when Barbara said that she could see them. I wasn't aware of them until I put the film into the computer, but it's a fascinating phenomenon.
It is, and I've seen this over and over again with people who we have brought down there. They come back, and they don't even realize till they get home how orb-full their photographs are. We had, and I also find it's very interesting that sometimes it's responsive to the person who's taking the picture. We have some people that don't have any orbs, and then we have people who are taking a picture standing in the same place who have tons of them. So I also think it's sometimes activated by the energy of the observer in that moment. Which is very interesting.
That's fascinating.
On the first trip, and she could not take a picture without orbs in it. And we were playing with it. We were giving her different cameras and different, you know, and we would all take a picture of the same thing because, you know, we're all using digital, so we can all look at it immediately. And she would take it, and there would be 50 orbs in the picture. And so then we'd give her different cameras to make sure, okay, it's not a lens thing. We were ruling out all of the physical possibilities. And this woman just, every picture she took was full of orbs. It was spectacular. There was something about her that was so relating to the energy around her that she was like creating it. It was very special. But yes, you're right. And there is, the energy is everywhere. And it's, you know, as Philip always says, it's an and universe. It's terrestrial and it's extraterrestrial. Mm. You know, it's from here and it's from there. It's us and it's them. You know, it's this amazing alchemy that happens in that place. It's very hard to describe, but very magic.
Oh, I have to agree with that.
Well, and the other thing I was going to talk about was in Rennes-le-Château. One of the things, some of you may have seen me on Ancient Aliens. Philip is on Ancient Aliens regularly. In fact, right now he is shooting season 4, so he's not here. But I was on this last season, and if you watch on the History Channel, actually I think they're now showing them on H2, which is the second History Channel as well. If you ever come across the episode, they repeat it very often, actually, because it was a very popular episode. There's an episode of Ancient Aliens called Gold, and that is the episode that I'm on with Philip, one of them. But it's the one where I'm specifically in front of the church in Rennes-le-Château. And one of the things I point out is this church is very famous. This is the Church of Mary Magdalene. This is the Church of the Blue Apples that we started out talking about at the beginning of the show. There's a very famous inscription that was put over this church, which everyone talks about, that says, est terribilis est loci. It means this place is terrible, or at least that's how it is always translated. But it's actually from the book of Genesis. And when you go to the Old Testament translations, it doesn't mean this place is terrible at all. It means this place is awesome. Terribilis didn't mean terrible to the people who wrote this inscription, and it didn't mean terrible to the people who wrote the Old Testament. It meant awesome. I mean, literally awe-inspiring, holy, extraordinary. But what most people don't see, they see this inscription that says this place is terrible, and they all say, oh, why would it say that over a church? But there's an inscription below it, which is the rest of the line in Genesis that says, this is none other than the house of God. It is the doorway or the gate to heaven. Mm-hmm. And Berenger Saunier, who built this church, restored this church, and put that engraving there, is telling us something very, very important. He is telling us this place is awesome because it is the doorway to heaven, that this place is a gateway. It is a portal to heaven, to our heavenly and our heavenly origins, to the gods, to who we are and at our most divine, that when we are in this place, we are completely connected to heaven. It's also a reference to the part of Genesis where Jacob has a dream, and he sees the angels going up and down on the ladder, right? It's the ladder from heaven to earth. He watches the angels coming back and forth on this ladder. And this is the exclamation that he has when he sees this. This place is awesome because here is a gateway to heaven. So these very enlightened people who came before us to France left us these little clues for those of us with eyes to see, so that we would know to appreciate and pay attention to everything that was happening around us, that this place is awesome.
That's such a great story. And I will say, on the trip, Rennes-le-Château was probably my favorite place. It was awesome. And when we left the church and we walked out back into the garden and we looked over the fence and the view of all the land below, it was truly magnificent. I think it was one of the most sacred places to me that we visited. And then, of course, having lunch with your friends, Toby and Gerda, and just enjoying the afternoon there, it was the highlight of the trip for me.
It's a very, very special place. And, you know, one of the things that Toby and Gerda have done is they have opened up that energy in an amazing way. You know, when I first went to that village in 1995, and this is the dark side here that we have to look at sometimes, the reason that Toby and Gerda were called there, the reason I was called there, the reason Philip was called there, the reason that a number of people were all called there in 1995 was because very, very dark things were happening in the village at the time. There were people who knew that this place was awesome, and they were using that energy for darkness and not for light. There were black masses happening in the church when I arrived there in 1995. I mean, the things that were happening there were corrupt and ugly and terrible. And all of us took this vow that this was a place that has been sacred to not only to Mary Magdalene, but to, you know, the most primordial version of the earth goddess since the beginning of time, and that we all felt a very, very strong passion and mission to clean it up. Mm-hmm. And we all swore that we were going to bring the love back to this place, and we were going to expel any energy that was trying to be there for darkness. And it has been quite a struggle. And but as you can see, the light has won. I mean, you can feel it when you're in that garden. Is such a place of love, and the divine feminine is back. And there are statues of Isis, and there are flowers and pictures of Magdalene. And she has returned to her garden, which is as it should be. But, you know, it is, when you are dealing with places of such extraordinary power, there are sometimes going to be, you know, these battles between light and dark, and they've been happening in that place for thousands of years. And it is a tribute to people like Toby and Gerda, who work every single day to keep the light and the love in that place. We call it the Garden of Reunions because it's where so many reunions happen. So many of us come together there. I met my beloved Philip in Rennes-le-Château. So it is a place that brings us all together, and it's our home. It's our sacred and spiritual homeland.
Well, there's no doubt about it. The love is palpable, and thank you so much for bringing the light back there. You know, I had read about it. Oh, gosh, when did Holy Blood, Holy Grail come out? In the 80s?
In the 80s, 1984.
Yeah, and I read it immediately and always dreamed of visiting Rennes-le-Château because of reading that book, and I had no idea that it was going through dark times, but you would not know that being there today. So thank you so much for the work that you've done. It
is
a little piece of heaven on earth.
They created that. I've been lucky enough to be on their coattails, but they really do all the work there. They're extraordinary, exquisite guardians of this place.
They are truly that.
Well, I think we're going to have one more caller possibly. But in the interim, I just want to say ahead of time, thank you so much to Kathleen McGowan and Catherine Brinkley for spending their time with us this evening and so vividly describing the energies there. And for the people that will be going on the tour, I'm sure the excitement level has just been turned up by a factor of 10. And for people who have yet to go, the time will come, and it'll just be a great experience. We do have one more person with a question, and I will have to ask that it be a very brief question because we just have minutes left here. So this is, if I get the name right, Tegan.
Yes.
You're on the air.
Hi. Sorry, I just sort of like logged onto the...
Can you speak up, sweetheart?
Yes, sorry. I just logged onto this sort of like sort of near the beginning, and I haven't ever heard of this tour or anything, but it kind of sort of resonates with me, the whole Christ consciousness and the Mary Magdalene, and I must have never heard of the tour before, but I definitely wished I'd gone on to something like this. But is it possible to tell me briefly what would the... sort of how would you know if you're a part of the bloodline of Mary Magdalene, or is that too much of a huge detailed question?
I can't hear her, so I don't know if someone else can tell me what the question was.
Is your question how to find out if you have the bloodline?
I resonate with it quite a lot, and I have never heard of anyone speaking about this before. I mean, I've just sort of logged onto this now, and I've never heard of this tour at all before.
Well, let me, number one, suggest that you read Kathleen McGowan's trilogy, The Expected One. And
The Expected One.
Yeah, and then there's The Book of Love, and then there's The Poet Prince. And if you can read those without any emotional reaction, then you're probably not of the bloodline. But if you read those books and they really stir you on a very deep soul level, I would also suggest because Lavendar can track not only astrologically the bloodline, but she also is hooked up and wired to track the soul records as well. And that's how this whole tour came together, from coming up with so many people that have been drawn to Starseed Hotline that have the markings for the soul records for the bloodline. So that would be my suggestion.
Because I'm an astrologer, is there specific, or is there a lot of markings that would say that, or is there specific markings?
There's more than one, and it's the combination.
Okay.
It's the combination of those markings plus Lavendar has a way of tuning into people's bloodline just from listening to their voice. So I would really highly recommend having a session with Lavendar to find out. You know, but if you read Kathleen's books, and you feel very strongly stirred on an emotional level, that's a very strong indication as well.
Yeah, I think I'll do that, because I've also had like dreams like since a child about being there and that type of thing. So, but I think I'll definitely do that then.
Yeah, I would highly recommend reading Kathleen's books. And I thank you so much for calling in, and I feel that you've just started on a path of awakening and activation, so please do follow through.
Yeah, well, because I just kind of logged onto this from nowhere, so from your sign.
Well, that's the way it happens. People just kind of find their way to this information through many different channels, and we're glad that you're here, and please do pick up the books. Thank you so much for calling in. We're going to have to
Thank
sign
so
off
much.
Here in
Thanks
a minute.
Thanks for the show. Okay, bye.
You're so welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, ladies, we have just less than a minute here. I do want to so deeply thank Kathleen McGowan and Catherine Brinkley for joining us this evening. Sierra and Lavendar, you would join
yes.
us as we sign off. And I do also want to say thank you to Sahar for hosting the switchboard for us and doing a great job. We will be back next week, as we are every Tuesday at 7 Eastern Time. And KathleenMcGowan.com and Catherine Brinkley is the best way to connect with you is through KineticsMag.com.
KineticsMag.com or QuantumMultimediaProductions.com. Either one.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Wonderful, wonderful experiencing such divine feminine energy coming from both of you. We will be talking again soon. And go ahead.
No, I just want to say thank you so much for giving us so much time and giving us so much air. It's beautiful. Thank you for what
you do. You're so welcome. And from all of us here at Starseed Hotline, have a great week, and we will talk to you next week. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.